What I want to deal with now is using UltraScan in conjunction with a Brohammer model or an energy model. They are in essence two sides of the same coin. The Brohammer model is what we really started with. We didn't call it the Brohammer model then because we never knew Tom Brohammer. But the Brohammer model is simply a regression model on how your handicapping figures equate with what's winning. An energy model is an after-the-fact model of what is winning with regard to early and late, especially, and, of course, total energy. I'll give you some examples from some letters and phone calls I've received. People who are using UltraScan, using it very successfully, and as bright as they are, I am fully convinced they are not any brighter than you are. Maybe they have just seen some light at the end of a tunnel that has not yet struck your eyes, and if so, let's share their insights. You're going to often find when you do an energy model of a track that it has a very distinct bias. You play the bias. You overly play the bias. If it's early, if it's running close to 53:47, that's early. So you accentuate the positive. You accentuate the fact that it's playing early, and you look for early pace horses. On your UltraScan readout, that's your early pace. Don't pay very much attention to UltraScan early or UltraScan late. Those two ratings shouldn't even be on the readout that we have come to subsequently find. They should be left in the algorithms, but not on the readout. Think of your pace scan, your early pace rating, and your sustained pace rating as your Brohammer model or regression model to determine the horse you're going to choose to play. All right, here's a situation we have find that develops all the time. You can eliminate any horse that is not within 0.72 of the total energy of the best horse in the race. How do you determine the best horse in the race? There are a lot of simple ways. You can do it after the fact by entering all the horses you feel are contenders. Or you can do this. You can scan the racing form and find the horse that has the fastest time in that race and enter his time on your PAR generator. Enter it anywhere, I don't care, do it by hand. Find out what his total energy is. And his total energy is his second call energy, we're talking about the horse now, not the pace of the race he ran against, plus his third call energy divided by two, third fraction energy divided by two, plus true speed, then divide the whole thing by two. That's total energy. Okay, if you don't want to do that yourself, look at top pick in the racing form, the consensus top pick or sweeps top choice, and do a real quick energy scan on that horse. Assume that that horse is going to be the top energy in the race. How you do it is up to you, but find the horse that's going to represent the top energy level of that race. Now, any horse that's not within 0.72 of that, you eliminate. Unless there are some severely extenuating circumstances, most of which we've discussed before, the primary one being class. Now, parenthetical to this, I've been asked by many, many people, should we not do a PAR generator program to determine energy, total energy we're talking about now, by class level, by claiming level, by purse level, by sex, by age, etc.? And I'm sorry to say the answer is an emphatic no. Mix dark age handicapping procedures and concepts with what you're doing with UltraScan or any phase of our methodology. The highest energy level in the race that you're handicapping represents the class energy of that race. It's as simple as that. The only time you're going to go wrong using this concept is when you've entered a horse whose total energy comes from a false pace line, from something, perhaps an extremely fast maiden win, where the competition was nothing like they're facing today. This is why I'm telling you that if you are in doubt about the top energy horse of the race, rely on sweeps. Rely on your favorite newspaper handicapper. Rely on the racing form consensus. Rely on something from an outside source. It'll pretty well pinpoint, not the winner of the race, mind you, but it will certainly pinpoint the top competitor that your horse is going to have to beat in the race, according to a variety of expert opinions. And let me say, these people's opinions are expert to that degree, even though they don't always pick the winners, or seldom pick the winners even. They do have a way of getting down to the better contenders. So the top contention in the race, whether you determine it, or whether sweeps determines it, or the racing form consensus determines it, or whether Abner Crabtree, your favorite local newspaper picker, determines it, let whatever source you use be the determining factor. Which horse is the one to beat? Which horse has the highest total energy? That's what you're going to be working against today. Use that figure as total energy and make sure that all your contenders are within 0.72 of that. It's as simple as that. That takes care of all your class, age, claiming level, allowance, purse, sex, whatever. It takes care of all those situations in one fell swoop, believe me. I had a client in Las Vegas who did not believe me for quite a while. He was doing fairly well, but certainly not well enough to quit his job. Then he decided he'd give it a whirl. He checked that .72, and lo and behold, he called me and said, "I apologize. I thought your whole energy concept was all wet, and it was too far out in left field, but I gave it a whirl, and now I'm winning at such a degree that my wife has quit her job at one of the casinos, and I have given up my job." He was managing apartments, and we're doing this full-time and doing very well. I don't expect immediate conversion to reality from all of you, but ultimately you're going to have to realize that this truth has been demonstrated by too many people for you to ignore it. Unless you have very realistically extenuating circumstances, a horse must be within 0.72 of the top total energy of the race. When I talk about total energy, I'm talking about our determination of what constitutes total energy. If it's not within 0.72, it is most likely not going to win. In fact, it'll win maybe 4% of the time totally. You'll have an outsider like that win the race. Parenthetically, I must insert, however, that if you're picking the wrong pace line, then of course this does not hold true, because if the pace line you should have selected is within 0.72 and the pace line you did select is not, you have to go back to square one and listen to your factor analysis picking the pace line tapes. One thing I wish we had included in those tapes, which I will address now, is the situation where the last race won by the horse was a win and or a wire-to-wire win, and that situation does not occur very often at the track where you play. Now, one of our people, Andy Gusick, went over to Turf Paradise in Phoenix, and he took dutifully the last race, unless he found an excuse to go back further. And he found that those horses were not winning. They did not repeat their last race win performance or very close second performance, because they had peaked in that last race. Frequently, those were wire-to-wire wins. They were easy wins, apparently, on paper at least. And that was it. The horse peaked and was going downhill. Now, we have a solution for that. It's very simple. Well, I'll harken back to the week we spent in New Orleans where these tapes started. I took a look in the New Orleans Fairgrounds Racing Form past performances, and we've got 11 races. I looked in every one of the 11 races, and I looked at every Fairgrounds race, every horse listed, to see how often a win, or second by a nose, or one of those things that it's tantamount to a win, repeated the next time. Lo and behold, in one day's form, I found one case of a repeat. Well, it very quickly grabbed us all that with that long stretch, that arduous stretch, and with the not lower class horses that frequent the fairgrounds, but lower class by Aqueduct Santa Anita standards, those horses could not repeat. They were taxed too much. They reached their peak. They won. They had nothing left for their next out. Only in one occasion was there a repeater. Now, if you scan several days' racing forms and find this to be true, then you have a track where there are very few instances of a horse repeating a maximal performance. Take that into consideration when selecting your choices for win. Frequently, those horses will place, however, so if you're playing exactas or quinellas, you cannot throw them out. What you do is, if you find this situation by a perusal of the racing form over a couple of days and finding that there are very few repeaters at that particular track, you just discount the horse's numbers and maybe eliminate the horse. But if you don't eliminate him, at least don't bank too much on him repeating, because they seldom do it. I found this to be true at Golden Gate and to a certain extent at Bay Meadows in the San Francisco Bay Area. You'll see it. It's a very marked situation. When you don't see any repeat winners and you go through the whole form at that particular track, you know the circumstances which cause it. The lower the class of the animal, the shorter the time it holds its form. Now, don't try to do that at Aqueduct, Belmont, Saratoga, Santa Anita, Hollywood Park, or Del Mar. I'll tell you why you're going to get burned, because at those tracks, you do have a goodly percent of winners who repeat. They might repeat twice, even three times. I'll almost always wager against them repeating a fourth time because of the pure law of probability. I've been caught up in that on a few occasions, but I have won some big purses by throwing out a horse going for its fourth win, even of our better grade tracks. Determining whether the repeat pattern is prevalent at your track or whether it's practically non-existent is so simple. Just go through a day or two's forms and see how often you see two wins in a row from horses coming from your track. Now, two wins in a row. Now, don't include a three-month layoff where he won a route 3 months ago, and now he's coming back and he wins a sprint. Now, that's not the same. I'm talking about two wins in a row in a logical sequence of time. So do this. Take your racing form. One day is good, 2 days is better, 3 days is enough. You just take a look and see how often horses repeat a win at your track. If you find that it's under 10%, you can doggone near throw out a last race winner unless that race was won by an exceptional amount of total energy. Like, for instance, 0.72 over anybody in the race today. Not within 0.72, but 0.72 over the nearest competitor. Then you might have to say, yeah, he might repeat. Because it does happen even at those non-repeater tracks. If you follow this procedure and you settle in your mind, you say, my track, they repeat, I can't throw a horse out because it happens too often, then forget what we're talking about now. But if you determine that at your track, they seldom repeat, then you have a great winning edge because you can virtually discount that horse as a winner. Now, remember, he very well may place. But as a winner, you can just about say he's going on the downswing. Show me a horse that came in second last with a reasonable effort, and that's most likely the horse that's going to win. While on that subject, I would like to address one of the great myths that horse players seem to allow to dominate their thing. And that is, you see two horses who ran against each other. You figure, well, this horse won, he's the better horse, so forget the one that this horse beat. Not true. The same goes for the horse that came in second as opposed to the horse who came in third. Or the horse who came in third and beat the horse who came in fourth, fifth, or even sixth against him. Just because one animal, one contender in today's race, had a better finish than another contender does not mean that that's going to happen again today. We have so many people who refuse to trust their figures because the figures say that the horse who came in third is better than the horse who came in first. And they say, that can't be true. This horse beat him. Believe the figures. They're going to get you the winner more often than you're trying to deny the figures. What happens here is that the horse that came in third or fourth actually ran a better pace race than the winner. The circumstances of the race made one horse win, but on the next time, this time we hope, that they face each other, your horse with the higher figures is going to win. It happens so frequently that I just have to tell you to forget the fact that one horse finished worse than another in the previous race. It is totally meaningless. Now, one of the things that Andy Beyer had against pace handicapping in the beginning before he made his great reformation and conversion was the fact that Ray Talbot was able to show that the horse who did not win the race was a better horse than the one who did. Andy could not conceive that as a possibility. But after losing several thousand dollars by not acknowledging that, he suddenly discovered pace. And he discovered that quite frequently the horse who did less well from the standpoint of finish position last time in a given matchup will come on to beat the horse that beat him last time. And this happens so often, you just cannot discount it. You must accept it. So don't pay too much attention to that order of finish over in the right-hand column there in your racing form. If you do, you're going to be bound for many, many disappointments because it's a totally meaningless figure with one exception. And that exception is what we call the tandem race. There are two types of tandem races. And these are horses that seem to always be going against each other. You look in their past performance and of 8 or 10 races showing they've been against each other maybe 4 or 5 times. Generally speaking, you're going to find one wins this week, next one wins next month, and they kind of share. Maybe it's a 2 out of 3 situation for one, but they kind of share. There's no way to really separate them. However, when you find a tandem situation where one horse always finishes second or third to the other, then pay it some mind, because you have a psychological situation here. It's very similar to humans. You can race against somebody you know, and you'll always come in second to this person because he's got you psyched out. Horses psych each other out, too. There are some horses who will always come in second or third to another horse. You'll recognize that in the form, but that's the only circumstances in which you will discount a horse who was beaten by another horse when it's a tandem race situation where one horse is always beaten by another. This, incidentally, can be turned into a positive. A show bet on that kind of a horse is as close to a sure thing as you'll find. And if it's a chronic placer, if it always comes in second, just make sure that the horse that it always comes in second to is in top form today. And there's your exacta. Don't expect that horse to win, but always expect him to follow as closely on the heels of the winner as possible. This is a psychological situation. You see it every day in human activity. Accept that it happens in horses too and capitalize on it. Now I'd like to address a matter of semantics. I have never been able to get people to get over saying my first choice, my second choice, my third choice, my fourth choice. That is a semantic problem which can get you into trouble when you're selecting your final two horses to bet. You say your first choice is the one with the highest numbers. Highest numbers where? Or your second choice has the second highest numbers. What highest, second highest numbers, etc. There are many examples in the UltraScan Answers Manual where the horse that had the third highest numerical ranking was the obvious choice to win. In order to win money from the races you win, you have to take your top two as the horses that are most likely to win the race, not win the numbers game, either on UltraScan or UltraScan Invariant. I will grant you this, that you shouldn't go beyond your top four choices, but within the top four choices, if you keep an accurate Brohammer model, which is merely a regression model on what is winning at that track, you will get the winner about 86% of the time if you chose. On opening day at Hollywood Park alone, the third numerical choice was the obvious choice to bet to win because it fit the sustained energy pattern, whereas the horse that was the number one numerical choice on both UltraScan and UltraScan Invariant, no matter which way you adjusted them, had no chance of winning the race by Hollywood's energy standards. Hollywood was running sustained last year. It is running sustained again this year. And two horses that came up tops in the numerical rankings of UltraScan and UltraScan Invariant came in the bottom in sustained pace. If you want to refer to your Mandel, I'm talking about Al Khalifa and Goodbye JY. Ordinarily, we would have thrown out Goodbye JY and Al Khalifa to begin with because they did not conform in any way to the energy pattern necessary to win. But not many people would throw those two horses out because on raw energy alone, they were the top horses. Their running style was so extremely early that they could not win at Hollywood Park with the second longest stretch in the United States. Besides which, they start sprint races at Hollywood Park in the middle of the back stretch. Belmont's the only other track I know that does that, so consequently they're going into the second fraction on a turn as opposed to on a straightaway, where they, as they do in most tracks. So you have an entirely different situation there. Knowing this, having kept an energy profile on Hollywood Park, you would automatically really throw these horses out, even though they were both cases top choices. Al Khalifa was the prohibitive favorite. Goodbye JY, because it had done its most of its work at Bay Meadows, was not an extreme favorite. But by the numbers, you would have put both of these horses at top. By using a Brohammer model, you would have seen they both place at the bottom in sustained pace. They would not make it at Hollywood Park. So can you keep an energy model with UltraScan? You bet you can. Always punch out the figures for early pace rating and sustained pace rating. Never mind UltraScan early and UltraScan late. They are secondary. Their relationships are the same, but they do not present as quite as dramatic a numerical different relationship between the early and the sustained pace. To rely on your early pace rating and your sustained pace rating to throw out some of these horses, now you're going to get burned. There was one race at Hollywood Park on the turf, which is traditionally a sustained pace race, where the horse won it on the lead. Didn't have a terrifically high early pace percentage, incidentally, but had the highest early pace in the race. The reason we bet the horse, and it was we put it in as a third bet, is because it was going off at 19-1 and it had the highest figures. Despite the fact that it's early and late violated the energy pattern of the track, you had to take a little bet on that horse at 19, because despite the fact that it violated the energy pattern, it was number one, a standout number one on early. It was not second or third. Plus the fact its total energy was so high, it demonstrated the fact that regardless of the way the track was running, it could compete. And it was a dead heat winner. Did not pay the 19-1 because of the dead heat, but it was initially paid 12-something to win and 10-something to place. But those being our top two horses, it was one of those unique circumstances when our top two horses dead heated, which would satisfy the needs of even those who are the most reluctant to bet two horses to win in a race. And not all of the letters we get on UltraScan are asking questions and posing problems for which they want solutions. I have one here from Kentucky, who was playing at, of all places, River Downs. He says, I'm amazed at what it will do. I ran, for the period of time he discusses, 63% plus every day using UltraScan plus Variant. Since the track is just into the start of the meet and horses are coming from everywhere. Now this person understood what he read in the UltraScan manual, and he knew that was the best choice. I am going to assume that he will also know when those horses have had a couple of races over the track to start making adjustments, and if necessary, use the UltraScan raw with user adjustments. What I find is when someone starts winning, they usually continue to win. Winning begets winning, and people seem to understand how to zig when they should zig and zag when they should zag once they got the handle on winning. I have another letter here from someone who says that somewhere in Perker there must be a genius or two. UltraScan is ultra stupendous. Have had only one losing day at Gulfstream and Hialeah for the whole meet. And he had 4-for-4 at Hialeah last week and goes on to tell me some very wonderful things, which we love to hear. I wrote him back that the bylaws of Perkel only allow for one resident genius, and he thanks him. I have no idea which UltraScan readout this man was using because he did not say, but obviously he solved the one that was working best at his track. And I'm sure that he will go on to solve it if the track changes, because I want to repeat, winning begets winning. You figure it out once, you never look back. We've been doing this for quite a number of years now, a full decade. And I find that until people start winning with a degree of consistency, they flounder, they ask questions which would nominally be called stupid, but which are not stupid in reality, but seem stupid in light of knowledge later gained. Once they win, they themselves are the first to say, hey, gee, I was stupid. Gee, I asked stupid questions. Now I'm a winner and I'll never look back, and they don't. The big obstacle is getting over that first hump of winning, and winning comes from confidence in what you are doing. Confidence in what you're doing comes from testing what you're doing truly and purely from an empirical observation of the facts. When Tom Brohammer first became a client, he was certainly not somebody who you would ask to author a book called The Brohammer Model. But Tom Brohammer, at first floundering with a method and coming to my office and asking some pertinent questions, later learned that the access to that door that opens on winners is gained by a regression on oneself. And that's how we called the regression model the Brohammer model. It has a nice ring to it. Tom merely did a regression on every race that he had played and found out what was winning and what was not winning, and therefore found out what he was doing right and what he was doing wrong. When you know what's right from history, you don't repeat history's mistakes, you repeat history's successes. You repeat that which works. We know that mankind has not done that in its own history, which is why we are in the circumstance we are today. But just because mankind has learned nothing from history doesn't mean that you, as a handicapper, should not learn something from your own history. So I say to you, take 20 races where you do know the results, where you do know who won and who didn't win. And what I'd like you to do is take the top four odds horses of that race, regardless of where they finished, and include the horses that finished first, second, or third. Now, this could be seven horses, or they could overlap, and it could be four or just five. Whatever they are, enter them all. Enter them all, taking the pace line that you think is most reflective of what it would do today, or the pace line which proved most reflective of what the horse actually did today, and enter those horses in your computer and use all three ways of employing UltraScan. The first time you enter them, say yes and enter the computer adjustments. Then do the race over and say no and enter 00. Then do the race over again, say no and enter your track profile adjustments. It's going to take you a while. It might take you 5 or 6 hours. Do 20 races, doing it all three of those ways, and see which of those three ways produced the most winners. I will say this quite frankly and honestly to you. If after having done that, you do not know how to use UltraScan, if you do not know how to use any of the programs we've offered you, you will never be a winner. If there's no way that you can know yourself and know what yourself is capable of and what yourself is doing, then there's no way you're ever going to learn how to know a horse. Know thyself and become a winner.